This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So all eyes are on President Trump as he decides what he's going to do with the vacancy on the Supreme Court after the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So let's talk about first what it is we know. We know he's going to make this announcement on who he is nominating to replace Ginsburg on Friday or Saturday. He told Fox and Friends that earlier this morning, and at a rally tonight or today in Ohio, he said the same thing. We know that the odds-on favorite is Judge Amy Coney Barrett. She is a conservative Christian judge. She's a circuit judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And we know that she was actually going to replace Kennedy, but they decided to wait for Ginsburg to leave because they wanted to replace a female justice with a female nominee. The optics are good. Now, with Coney Barrett, the establishment loves her. Conservative establishment loves her. Evangelicals love her because of her religious beliefs. And the way she has been open on the court to interpreting the law in a way that is conducive to conservatives winning arguments. So she's well-liked. And by all accounts, according to the folks on the Hill, she's the number one contender. But there are also two other women who are very strong, who are very brilliant, who are very conservative that are on this list. One of them is Justice Barbara Lagoa, or Judge Barbara Lagoa. Not only is she a conservative with a whole bunch of allies, including a Trump defender and confidant in Matt Gaetz, she also happens to be Hispanic and from Florida, which has some additional implications in winning the state of Florida. Again, the perception is you've already got Latinos in this country who are leaning towards Trump in numbers that we haven't seen in the past. And then you tap a Hispanic judge for the Supreme Court. That could move the needle even more. On top of that, she's not plagued by the issue of abortion. Amy Coney Barrett, folks like on the right because they believe she will overturn Roe versus Wade. Whether or not Roe v. Wade actually gets overturned, even in this new Supreme Court, I'm not certain. But with Lagoa, while we assume she's pro-life, no clue as far as the judicial decision she has offered. So in theory, it could be a little bit easier for her to avoid that issue. And then, of course, will Democrats attack a Latina? They'll go ahead and attack Coney. They'll go ahead and attack her, not as a woman, but as a Christian. They think that that's okay. But would they attack a Latina? And then finally on the list, she's getting some attention. She is a Circuit Court of Appeals judge on the Fourth Circuit. Judge Allison Jones Rushing, also very conservative. She held a clerkship for then-Judge Neil Gorsuch and then for Justice Clarence Thomas. So that should give you a general sense of ideologically, judicially, where she might stand. So then the question then becomes, well, when is the vote going to happen? Now, I said it last hour, I argue you announce on Friday or Saturday, then you make the entire campaign about the nomination. Trump goes out there and says, reelect me, keep Senate in the control of the Republicans, and you get this nominee that I have just announced on the bench, and we will get a sane and reasonable Supreme Court. That should be the messaging. A leading issue in voting for President Trump in 2016 was the Supreme Court. And that was an issue that was months removed from when a vote would actually take place. Here, it's going to be top of mind. Here, it gives the opportunity for President Trump to play to one of his strengths. He released a list of his contenders because he's going to say, and has said, and will continue to say, he's got nothing to hide. What about Joe Biden? Why doesn't he put out a list? Because the names on it are so extreme. That's his argument.
And I created a list. And Biden should do that, too. He's got all radical left, major radical left players. That's why. And if he puts a centrist in. Somebody that really should be is somebody that's not so far left that it would be a member of the AOC plus three crowd. He will. He's got a problem if he puts somebody on that is not going to be popular with a certain group of people. They will all run away from him like the plague.
That is a good strategy. It's a really good strategy. Highlight the list either being too extreme, which then alienates independents, because that's already a fear from independents. Or you say it might be too moderate, which doesn't just cause infighting and then demands from the progressive base, but also gets independents wondering if Biden can be trusted if he's unwilling to stand up to the progressive base. It is a very, very smart strategy. It's a winning strategy. But rather than respond with reason and intellect, Democrats are refusing to reject impeachment as a way to deal with the president moving forward and nominating someone and pushing for a vote before the election. They refuse, the Democrats, to reject impeachment. George Stephanopoulos on ABC put that question to Nancy Pelosi.
Some have mentioned the possibility, if they try to push through a nominee in a lame duck session, that you and the House could move to impeach President Trump or Attorney General Barr as a way of stalling and preventing the Senate from acting on this nomination.
Well, we have our options. We have arrows in our quiver that I'm not about to discuss right now.
Okay, why not? Why can't you just simply say impeachment is not on the table? Impeachment being on the table is insane, especially because no law would be broken. This is literally in the Constitution. The president has the right and the Senate has the right to do this here. Why not just simply say we've got another bunch of strategies? We're not going to get into it. But no, of course, impeachment's not on the table because we don't want to politicize impeachment. That would be a lie, of course, because clearly we know that they want to impeach the president again. And they do want to politicize impeachment again. But as she's doing that, and AOC is out there doing the same thing, Amy Klobuchar doing the same thing, other Democrats are basically saying, look, this move by Republicans is hypocritical. And if they did that right, that would be a winning argument. Arguing that the Republicans created a rule or a precedent when they decided to reject Merrick Garland back in 2016. But the way that they're doing it, and at least the way they're being called out on their own hypocrisy, is a little bit weird. Tim Kaine, senator, former vice presidential nominee, he was on MSNBC, and even they called him out for being in favor of the Garland vote, but then not in favor of the vote of whomever President Trump ends up nominating.
I said that to encourage the Republicans to do what had been done in the past and to grant a hearing on a vacancy that occurred 9 months before the election. They listened to me and they said, no, we're going to change the rule. The new rule is this. If it happens in a presidential election year, we're not moving forward. And they said, Hallie, as you know, when there's a Republican president, we'll follow the same rule.
Now, again, I'm assuming this is a winning argument because most people will say, oh, yeah, they created a rule. They created a rule. Peyton, did they create a rule?
Yeah, they created a rule.
They didn't, though.
But no, they created...
No, I know that's what they said. They didn't create a rule. There's no rule. There's nothing written down that says this is what we're going to do. Nor, by the way, did they follow precedent or create precedent. They didn't create precedent. They did it this one time. Oh, no, they didn't. They did it before. Oh, the actual precedent that Tim Kaine and others don't want to talk about comes from the fact that out of the 10 times in which there was an election coming up, with a split in party control of the executive and the Senate, meaning one is controlled by the Democrats, the other is controlled by Republicans, and a Supreme Court vacancy occurred, only two times did they vote out of the 10. So actually, the precedent was to do what they ended up doing, which is saying, no, I'm a pass on that. That's the actual precedent. Now, speaking of precedent, when you've got the party in charge of the White House and the Senate, the precedent has been, history has been, to go ahead and vote, even if it might not look good. But there is no rule. GOP had control of the Senate, and they smartly moved to stop the nomination. It was a gamble, but a gamble that they ended up winning. But again, if the Democrats wanted Garland then, they should acknowledge that there is, in fact, no rule. Here is President Obama back in 2016.
The Constitution is pretty clear about what is supposed to happen now.
This is true.
When there is a vacancy on the Supreme Court, the President of the United States is to nominate someone.
Okay.
The Senate is to consider that nomination.
Yep.
And either they disapprove of that nominee or that nominee is elevated to the Supreme Court.
100%. I'm not a constitutional scholar like President Obama is, but can you just quickly check, Peyton, on the Wikipedia? Has the Constitution changed?
No, it hasn't changed.
Exactly. It hasn't changed. Nothing has changed from 2016 to 2020. Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution tells the Senate you have the right to withhold consent as it deems necessary. In 2016, they withheld. In 2020, they're saying, yeah, we're not going to withhold. By the way, that's the same exact position Chuck Schumer held back in 2007 under George W. Bush. Did he break his own precedent? When you put actual knowledge and logic to their strategy, it crumbles. Well, not everyone knows that about the Supreme Court and the rule. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. When we come back, the Department of Justice has identified their cities that they believe have been overcome by anarchy. Is Seattle on the list? Yes. We'll tell you why when we come back. The IRS is increasing the number of officers in Washington State, and if you owe money, they're going to come for you. Don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N. Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
It is official. We knew it was going to happen. We knew it was coming. But it is now officially official. The Department of Justice has put their list of anarchist cities out there. Anarchist cities that will lose federal funding because of their decision to give up on law and order. And to literally no one's shock, except for people who want to pretend that they're shocked, Seattle made the list alongside Portland and New York City.
It is abhorrent. It's inhumane.
It's abhorrent.
And we need our federal partners to step up.
That is Teresa Mosqueda, the council member who is going to be running for mayor, feigning shock and outrage. It's abhorrent. It's inhumane. Chop/Chaz was abhorrent and inhumane. But she helped create Chop/Chaz. She was there alongside the activists who were shouting death threats to police. She decided to side with the criminal activists. Help CHOP get created and do literally nothing to stop it. And as a result, she helped get Seattle on this list.
This news from the Department of Justice came with the threat to slash federal funding coming into the city of Seattle at a time when our businesses are shutting down.
Shutting down? Is she going to say shutting down? You think she's going to say shutting down? There's no way she's going to say it's coming at a time where businesses are shutting down. There's, right? She can't say that. That would be absurd.
Why don't you just find out?
Our businesses are shutting down.
Yeah, she said it.
She did say it, which is kind of weird because she just passed a payroll tax targeting businesses. Now, according to a new survey, record numbers of Seattle businesses are looking to go to the east side of King County instead of staying in Seattle. Amazon literally moving jobs outside of Seattle because of what she did, not because of anything surrounding the coronavirus. That's the funny part about this. Now, you'll recall D.C. was originally on that list of anarchist cities, but apparently the D.C. mayor had a conversation either with the president or with the White House, and the name city is no longer on the list. So presumably, Mayor Bowser made some sort of deal on how to deal with some of the unrest in the future. We'll see. But this can't come as a shock. When you look at the criteria for how they were judging these cities, whether a jurisdiction forbids the police force from intervening to restore order amid widespread or sustained violence or destruction. Yeah, definitely in Seattle. Whether the jurisdiction has withdrawn law enforcement protection from a geographical area or structure. Yeah, that happened also. Whether a jurisdiction disempowers or defunds police departments. That has happened. That might get overturned, by the way, tomorrow. We'll see. But that has happened. And then whether a jurisdiction unreasonably refuses to accept offers of law enforcement assistance from the feds. That happened. Specifically, when you look at the rundown, the Department of Justice cited CHAZ and CHOP. They specifically cited the murder of Lorenzo Anderson, where firefighters and EMTs couldn't go in and actually respond to the shooting because it was not safe for them to do so because police were pulled out. Police were told they can't actually go in. Is anyone really shocked that this is happening? I mean, the president said this was going to happen. The president gave these cities and all other cities a lot of time to say yes to taking up their offer on federal law enforcement assistance, and they said no over and over again. Not only did they say no, they bragged about saying no in Portland. Here in Seattle, Mayor Jenny Durkan said that bringing in federal law enforcement officials is like a dry run for martial law. What a remarkably stupid comment to make. Now, of course, Durkan and Wheeler and Bill de Blasio out in New York, they're going to use this to say yet again, this is a political attack. They're coming after us simply because we're progressive. Instead of pointing out their role in allowing the anarchy to begin with. No one is arguing, and the president hasn't argued this, and the DOJ certainly isn't arguing this, that you can't step outside without getting hit by a brick thrown by an anarchist. No one is saying that. But you have sustained violence in these cities where there was no meaningful consequence outside of the Department of Justice via the Attorney General putting pressure on U.S. attorneys to actually push through federal charges. We've got, what, 8 federal charges here? Not from Dan Satterberg, because in King County they don't charge, but from Brian Moran, the U.S. attorney, who takes this seriously. Charges against people for using Molotov cocktails to try to murder police officers. Jenny Durkan was silent. She remains silent. On attacks against cops here. On CHOP, she allowed it to happen. Ted Wheeler allows this to happen in his city. Bill de Blasio, the same thing.
This is just another one of President Trump's games. It's thoroughly political. It's part of his campaign strategy. It makes no sense.
Well, no. It makes sense. It's true that it's part of a political strategy because he's running for president and he's running for president on law and order. But, I mean, at some point, if you run on law and order and then you actually institute law and order policies, you're going to ultimately say it's always political. Does the reverse mean like when Joe Biden campaigns on something and then follows through on it, rather than crediting them for doing what they said they were going to do, we're going to say, oh, no, it's just political.
It's not based in the facts in the least. Mm-hmm. It's insulting to the people of New York City.
No, it's insulting to you, the people of New York City, the ones who haven't fled. Have been calling you out. That's why your polling is looking so bad.
And his effort to withhold our funding is unconstitutional.
Okay, well, make that argument in court. We'll see who wins. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local.
Bellingham, Bellevue, Shoreline, Tacoma.
This is the Big Local on The Jason Rand Show.
Olympia, Everett, Mercer Island.
Stories about you. Not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle because the media is already hyper-focused on Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in Kennewick with another reason why you should reopen schools for in-person learning. A creepy-looking dude broke into a house while two kids were there alone in their online courses. Now, the good news is everyone is okay. Obviously, the two kids are freaked out, but they were not harmed. And the bad guy was actually caught and arrested by police. However, I'd like to explore this story a little bit.
Please, explore.
There were some details that jumped out at me. And it's a story that comes to us from Como TV. He said two teens were inside the home when the incident occurred. A 19-year-old woman and her 16-year-old brother. Police say the woman saw the man enter the home through the sliding glass back door. The woman then rushed to a bedroom and locked herself inside. Her younger brother was in another bedroom logging on a computer for class. Did you not go to his room to let him know that this was happening?
Every person for themselves, Jason.
Did you just kind of give up on your younger brother? You abandoned him in his time of need?
Look, that's the brother's problem.
Police say the older teen called police and managed to escape through an open window. Her younger brother also managed to escape through a window, probably when he found out there was someone inside the house, but his sister apparently didn't warn him. Or did she? They don't say that in the story.
You gotta think the sister, like, did that on purpose. Maybe there was a fight a few minutes
right before
that.
This
she
is
was just like, fine, I'm not letting him know.
Do you send, like, a text to the brother, say, hey, FYI, don't want to freak you out or anything, but I have locked myself in a bedroom because there is a crazy man in our home, and my plan is to exit via the window.
I know you're logging on for class right now. You have a test, so prioritize properly, but there's a burglar.
She couldn't just literally run. How? The house isn't that big.
You want her to run by the room and say, like,
no, if you're going to lock yourself in a room, lock yourself in the room with your brother, because then at least, let's say you can't escape, right? Let's just assume that. Then you at least have two people against one crazy dude, instead of the crazy dude taking one of you out first and then just going to the other one.
There's got to be a logical reason that she didn't go into her brother's room. Maybe the brother's door doesn't have a lock on it. Maybe the brother wouldn't protect her in a fight and just slow her down.
I mean, if it was me, I would have thrown my sister in front of me and then escaped.
Human shield?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or a victim, like a sacrifice of some kind, because I would do what she did, but I'm a bad person. Maybe she's a bad person too. Police say they showed up. They asked the guy to leave the house. After 10 minutes of not responding, he then left. They ended up arresting him. Police say one of the teens thinks this is the same dude who broke into the same house at some point last year. So he came back for more.
How much more could they have possibly gained in a year that you haven't already stole? Like, they just replace everything that this dude stole. Like,
well, I mean, then you get that stuff. It's actually a really good system.
Do you need it?
You're selling it on the black market, and then you're using the money to buy drugs.
That's
what I've learned about life on the streets.
I'm assuming this dude's stealing things because he's like, hey, they got a nice TV. I want one of those. So he goes and watches the TV. But now you already have like a 60-inch TV mounted on your wall. Do you really need the
How many TVs in your house? Yeah, exactly.
Three, four.
That's why.
Five, six, seven, eight, nine?
You have nine TVs?
Yeah.
Okay. That's weird. We have now confirmed the cause of the fire in Malden. A tree made contact with the power line, presumably due to the winds, and it caused the fire. Now, maybe you'll recall, because we covered it at the time, and the media was focused on this at the time, September 7th is when it started, and at that point, they were having insane gusts of wind that ended up getting as high as 50 miles per hour, which is why it spread so quickly. Now, a spokesperson for the utility company, name is Casey Fielder, she confirmed that a burned tree was found And that is the apparent starting point for the fire. So there are no conspiracies out there that need to persist about maybe this was being one of the fires started by an activist. We have not seen evidence of any of that outside of the smaller ones in which, for example, they were caught. But like the bigger, more devastating fires, the wildfires, there's no evidence that it was started by an activist. Same thing in Bonnie Lake. I know that there were a lot of conspiracies there. Police have investigated. They're not believing that either. They say in that case was a similar. I think that point was a branch that fell on a power line and caused some of the fires.
There's still one conspiracy theory that's completely alive, though, and that's Mother Nature is a crazy activist who wants to start and burn all these cities.
Is it shocking that Mother Nature, with her little pink hat, is a little bit of an activist?
You're not shocked?
I'm not. I expect that from Mother Nature. Father Nature, a little more level-headed. Speaking of conspiracies, I'm kidding. Well, no, I'm kidding, so I don't get in trouble. Well,
Mother Nature's going to spite you.
You spite me all you want. In line with all the supernatural things that want to spite me in my life. Some residents in the city of Squim, they want their mayor to resign or be recalled from office because apparently he supports QAnon. Mayor William Armacost was on a radio station, KSQM, and he made these comments that caused quite the stir in the city of Squim.
QAnon is a truth movement that encourages you to think for yourself. Those who are corrupt will do everything they can to suppress the truth.
I mean, the last part, I believe, just in a general sense, but nothing else. QAnon believers are insane and they're dangerous. Now, you can believe in some sort of, like, quote-unquote deep state in a general sense, because we certainly know there have been people who are working in this administration to undermine President Trump. We know that as a fact. But when you get into the belief that, like, satanic pedophiles and cannibals created a sex child or child sex trafficking ring, you've officially gone into the nut job area. You have. And it's important to acknowledge that QAnon is not something anyone should be associated with. So he made these comments. And now, as a result, some folks in the community want him gone.
We want to stand up and say this is not who we are. This is not our mayor. Mm-hmm. And he should step down.
Well, I mean, he is your mayor. That's why you're asking him to step down. That is Sheena Younger, a resident there, talking with King 5. And she's basically saying, look, this dude, because he's so cray-cray. The kids still say that.
No.
Because he's still crazy. We don't think he's a good representation for us.
He believes that what he believes is the truth. And he doesn't care that the majority of his citizens don't agree with that. And he doesn't represent us.
Okay. I mean, he does represent you. That's why you're trying to get him out. I hate language like that. He has not responded to questions from King 5, nor from questions from us, right?
No, he hasn't got back to me.
Boo.
I'm very
just
bummed
lie
out.
And tell him we're QAnon supporters.
Are you? You've never told me if you are or aren't.
If I don't actually answer that on the record, it's not a lie when you lie to him. I mean, it's a lie because I'm calling it a lie, but it's technically not a lie in the lie.
You've never went on the record saying that you are not a QAnon supporter.
Yeah, I've called them nut jobs.
Yeah.
But have I, now there's going to be a stranger report. Jason Rantz supports QAnon. So Younger says the mayor's office has a big impact on the citizens there, and this kind of stuff ends up hurting all of us. Now, we faced some sort of complaint that was dismissed because you can't file a complaint against someone for having a position you don't like, even if it is insane. So they're looking into the possibility of a recall petition to get him out of office permanently.
These types of ideologies and thoughts are not okay. And they're definitely not okay for an elected official of our little town here to be publicly promoting them as mayor of Squim. Not okay.
Why not just vote him out?
Well, it wouldn't be for until, I think, till 2023.
Yeah.
And this is just too egregious to allow to wait for his term to be up.
I'm so on the fence on this because I generally, as a matter of principle, don't like recall efforts unless it's tied to some kind of illegal action.
Yeah, there's nothing illegal with being a QAnon supporter.
You can be a crazy person. I suppose I'm a little on the fence here because the whole concept of supporting QAnon is insane, and it does make me question their mental health, right, and intellect, frankly. But you should have done better opposition research when he ran.
Yeah, there's no one to blame here but the city of Squim for voting this guy.
Y'all elected him. And, you know, there's one thing calling for him en masse to get him to step down, and that, I think, is totally appropriate in a situation like this, but it's ultimately up to him. I don't like running to recall efforts unless there is a legal reason to. Because this, even though what he says is objectionable, right? There can be that slippery slope of then, oh, well, he's a conservative, so I'm going to recall him. Well, he was a conservative that whole year, like he ran as a Republican. He believes in supporting police. Yes, I mean, that was actually part of the person's campaign. The person was, she was always open about it. Like, I just don't like going down that avenue. That said, I hear her saying, yeah, wait, it's a 2023? That's insane.
I just wanted to spew more and more QAnon stuff.
I mean,
oh, until 2023.
I just want to play the audio. I'd like to talk to him. I'm not going to yell at him. I'll call him nutty.
I think he would accept that. I think QAnon supporters understand that they're nutty.
Do they?
They have to.
Do they?
I just read a QAnon thing where they believe LeBron James is summoning demons every time he throws his chalk into the air.
Well, that part's true.
That's what's happening? That's why
he's
such a
good... Well, QAnon. That's just fact. When he throws what into the air?
Chalk. You go over, you fill your hands with chalk, you rub your hands together, you throw all the dust up into the air, dries out your hands.
You think that's a demon?
Yeah, they think he's summoning demons. They even, like, circled the silhouette of a demon in the chalk.
I'm just saying, he is supernaturally good at basketball.
That's why he's so good. I never summoned demons as a kid, so that's why I stopped growing at 5'9".
Yeah.
If I was 6 foot, I'm in the NBA. 5'9". On a good day, 5'9".
Yeah.
When I'm
you're
wearing,
even on your tippy toes right now, and you're not.
When I'm wearing my Air Maxes.
Yeah. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. When we come back, we're going to settle some facts on accusations made against the Seattle Police Department. We'll tell you about it when we come back. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show live on this Monday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. After the riots in Seattle on May 30th and 31st, a whole bunch of criminal activists and Antifa agitators and their surrogates, they tried to pretend that that riot was actually a peaceful protest. And the only ones responsible for the violence were the police. It's the evil, evil police officers. Now, anyone with even half a brain understood that the activists were lying. Anyone who did just even a casual search on Twitter knew they were lying. The images speak for themselves. Nevertheless, these activists decided to flood the Office of Police Accountability, OPA, flood them with complaints. Now, one of the complaints that got a whole lot of attention, and I mean a whole lot of attention, because they got 19,000 complaints, 13,000 of them were about a 7-year-old boy who was at the riot with his irresponsible father, and the kid ended up getting pepper sprayed. Now, activists at the time decided to dox a cop who they thought was responsible. He was not. OPA and the SPD put out the information very, very quickly that he had nothing to do with the pepper spray incident, and yet, still, people decided to dox this guy. Because the activist community, they don't care. They don't care. They ignored it. They continued to say that this kid was specifically targeted by a cop. Now, body cam footage shows that the kid wasn't, in fact, targeted by police. It turns out that this kid got hit with pepper spray during a scuffle where an activist didn't just assault a police officer, but she tried to take his baton. And so the officer in question pepper sprayed her to get her to stop. Picking it up from there is Andrew Meyerberg. He is the director of OPA, talking with our sister station, Cairo Radio.
What happens is that officers start to push back, and a female protester who's wearing a white shirt begins to push through the line. And she grabs a baton of one of the officers and starts to push into that officer while holding the baton. At that point, the sergeant, he steps up to the line, says, "Move back, move back." She pushes through, and he pepper sprays her with a burst of pepper spray that appears to be in the head area. At that time, she kind of ducks and turns, and it looks like some of the pepper spray bounces off of her head. And they didn't know this at the time, but immediately behind her is the father. What we were able to figure out by looking at other video and other angles is that the father had moved from about 15 feet away towards the disturbance with his son and was positioned directly behind the protester when she pushed through at the time she was pepper sprayed. So it looks like some of it spilled over her and affected the father and then the child.
He reviewed, his office reviewed five body cameras on five different officers. They also looked at video that was posted online. They also, of course, interviewed officers. And yet, still, the activist community is upset. David Owen is a civil rights attorney in Seattle who represents this kid and the father, and said the family is, quote, "deeply disappointed but not surprised by the result reached by the OPA." Not surprised because you knew they would tell the truth? Oh, no, that's not what he means. He said today they've confirmed that it is the Seattle Police Department's position that the use of pepper spray in an intentional and reckless manner, that it would strike an innocent child exercising their First Amendment rights, is, quote unquote, within policy. We understand the OPA has said it's sorry for these actions, but sorry and regret is not sufficient. We demand change. I demand you get a better client who's not an irresponsible father who brings a 7-year-old kid to a riot. Because anyone, again, with half a brain understands what these events end up becoming. And when you see clearly a whole bunch of people who are aggressive towards police officers, you don't keep your kid there. Period. That is inappropriate. It's not the kid's fault, by the way. It's the father's fault. And it's the woman's fault who decided to try to assault those officers. I know exactly what happens at these events because we cover them all the time. And the people who wanted to pretend that all that they experienced was a peaceful protest, you made it a lot more easier for this father to make the wrong move.
You know, what you're dealing with is a situation that's incredibly chaotic, high emotions on all sides, that happens in a span of seconds. And they're not, most of these situations are not particularly easy to discern, right? Because the officers may be thinking one thing, the protester may be thinking another, and both sides in some cases may be totally valid in what they're thinking.
Not often. Now, again, I have bias that's pro-police. I do. I will say this, going to that riot, probably not safe. Oh, no, sorry. I was going to say it's not safe in regards to the coronavirus, but there's a medical analyst from CNN. Her name is Dr. Leanna Wen. She said that it's totally safe to go to a rally, except if it's a pro-Trump rally. Then it's totally unsafe.
It doesn't care why it is that people are gathering, but it does care about the conditions under which they're gathering. So,
okay. So now the coronavirus understands the conditions.
Outdoors, much safer than indoors. Wearing masks, obviously much safer than not wearing masks. And I also, in this case, would distinguish between the behavior of the participants while at protests versus rallies. At protests, many people are aware of the risks and are doing everything they can to reduce that risk. Versus at many of these rallies, we're seeing people going in defiance. And it's their behavior during those events. There was a study looking at over 300 cities where protests occurred, and they did not find surges of infections tied to these protests.
Did you find surges of infections tied to any of these rallies with Trump? The ones that are outdoors, I'm just kind of curious. Speaking of which, the president is about to speak in Swanton, Ohio, his second rally in Ohio of the evening. We're going to be carrying a portion of that live as we check in with the president to see his latest comments on filling the Supreme Court vacancy. Plus, we're going to analyze all the politics behind it. We're going to get to that and so much more. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message, or better yet, follow me on Twitter. Twitter.com/JasonRants.